Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much. I'm Rick, not Rich. I don't text and drive. Our guest today, Reverend Tyler Daniels. Tyler is the pastor at Piney Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you being here. Tell us first, how does a pastor get to be here live on a Sunday at 11 o'clock?
Today is a little thing we call vacation, which amazingly our people afford for us. We're really grateful that the folks at Piney Fork are worshiping this morning. Got a great guy in the pulpit who's there in my stead. And my family gets to come to Charlottesville, which is a remarkable privilege for us. So, yeah, having a great weekend. Good time.
Well, thank you so much for being here on the wake-up call.
Yeah, thank you.
So I thought that we would take advantage of Reverend Daniels being here with us. And I'm so excited to have this conversation. I thought we would talk about modern religion, life as a pastor, and what seems to have become a regular topic in the world today, how politics and religion have blended together. So let's start the conversation. First thing I want to know is how your church is doing with the number of folks, because one of the conversations that seems to be is how religion and certainly churches seem to have a lesser conversation, lower number of folks in their conversation, in their church every day. Is your church still alive?
When last I checked, yes. It's a phenomenon that we see just about everywhere. We've talked about the number of people who are coming to worship in a church on a Sunday. That has changed dramatically over the last 50 years, 40 years. And there are 100 different things that people talk about as to why. I can speak for what I've seen in my own ministry. We are Piney Fork Baptist Church. It says Gretna, Virginia, but we're in the country west of Gretna, Virginia. So we're not even Gretna. We're out there in beautiful farmland right across from some tobacco fields and some cattle pastures. And what we see out there is that the demographics around us have changed so much. Family farms have changed into either larger farming operations to where the old family homes are no longer inhabited. Maybe they're rented out by others who have come in. And so just around us, the culture has changed. And so those who built churches like Piney Fork Baptist Church, those who were there 100 years ago, 75 years ago, those families, they have grown. Many of them have gone. The ones who have stayed are older, perhaps maybe a little less able. So that affects church attendance and who's there. But honestly, the wider cultural issues are really what we see a lot. Cultural Christianity, as we used to know it, is just about gone. The idea that you would go to church just because you should go to church. People don't do that anymore. There's not as much of a social advantage to it as there might have been in the middle of the 20th century. There's just not much of a real compelling reason for folks to go. And the culture has also filled in those gaps. We've got more than enough to keep families occupied on Sundays. We have more than enough ways for them to connect with other people. And so the church, as just sort of a natural, functional part of your community that people used to be a part of just because they ought to, that's gone. Which means in church life, you have a couple of different groups of people. You have the folks who are hanging on, and we're grateful for them because they've built the church and they have loved the church and stewarded it well. And you have the folks who are younger in the faith, who have come to know the faith at a later time, or maybe they're a younger family coming up, and they're alive in that faith, but it's a different demographic in the church. It's no longer just everybody always. It's those who are either deeply committed to the structure of the church, or those who are really engaged in the life of the faith. And those two are the groups that are really keeping the local church together. Is Piney Fork alive? Yeah, we're alive, but we're a little country church. That's the way you would describe us. But we are still there, and we are grateful to be there because we love our neighbors and our neighborhood. And so we get to worship well and try to serve them.
How have things changed in the last 10 or 20 years? You mentioned that a lot of your attendees were an older crowd.
Yeah.
How has it changed in the last 10 or 20 years, other than those attendees aging 10 or 20 years?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's been a critical part of the picture there, too, is as they've aged, that's changed some of the dynamic in church as well, how many are there and who can be there. But as far as what we've seen with the folks, we think about who it is we are trying to reach in the church, how it is we are going to continue to not just minister to others, but also bring folks into the church family. And a lot of the way we go about that has changed in the last 10 or 20 years. To go back to things that we did when I was a kid, now I'm not an older guy, you know, I'm in my middle 30s, but even when I was a kid, we were really deliberate about trying to reach people with the gospel. We tried to really teach our young people how they can talk about it, how they can know what's in the scriptures, and how they can go and invite others into the life and the hope that they have. And then for a while, we sort of wandered away from that. We got scared of that, I think, as a church. We started being told that when it comes to in your neighborhood, people didn't want you to go knock on their door. They didn't want you to talk to them about these things. If they wanted what the church had, then they knew where the church was and they could come and get it. And over the course of a generation, 20 years or so, what we've seen is that's had a dramatic effect on the life and vitality of the church, because churches immediately start to decline when they depart from the hope it is they have to share with others and stop deliberately sharing it. You know, we have the one message that we believe, and we've not talked about, you know, what our church believes or what denomination we are, but as a conservative Southern Baptist evangelical, throw all the words in there, you know, we believe in the truth of God's word, the scriptures. We also believe in the urgency of its message. And as we've tried to pivot and begin to get back really to the urgency of getting the gospel of Jesus out, we've seen how that has started to connect more people back to the church. The church isn't the thing we want them to connect to. We want them to connect to faith. But as they have started to connect in faith, we've seen that come back in the church. But it's different from the way that it used to be. Those 20 years in between were really critical, though. And that led to a period of decline or maybe disenchantment, frustration in the church. We're hoping to come back around on that in the middle 21st century.
Again, our guest today is Pastor Tyler Daniels. He's from Piney Fork Baptist Church down in the Gretna, Virginia area, here on a Sunday when he's on vacation and stopping by WPVC here in Charlottesville at Sunday morning wake-up call. So how do you lower the average age of your church?
It's a great question. If you don't have an answer, I don't either. No, I think there are some things that we're working on in churches. What we've discovered is when we reach out to younger people, they tend to be hungry for the faith. They have a desire to find the truth and to be able to bring their family up in it. The issue that we have culturally is that truth is subjective. You can turn anywhere and find the truth that you want to live by, the truth that you want your family to fall in line with and live up to. But of course, when you are convictional about faith, particularly about the truth of the scriptures, when you're convictional about Jesus, whom they point to, you know, we believe in this sort of singular truth. There's one sort of lens through which we view the world. There's one truth. And as we have shared that with others, we get predictable responses. Some people, you know, they just say, well, that's nice for you, and they, you know, leave us there. But also, we've noticed that there are young people who want to have what it is the scriptures promise to them, who want to have the life and the hope that Jesus himself promises. They want the comfort that is promised with God's Spirit, a gift that God gives to us. And so as we have tried to reach younger people, yeah, they're busy. And yeah, we've got to figure out how does it not has it fit their life, but how do they see their lives fitting in the faith? They're there to be reached, and they desire to be a part of it. The growth that we've had as a church, which has been slow and it's been incremental, but the growth that we've had as a church has all been folks who are younger than 50 years old. We call those young people at Piney Fork Baptist Church. If you are if you are in your middle 50s or younger, you are a young adult. How does that work for you?
That works. I understand.
So all the growth that we have seen has been in those demographics and younger, adding folks who are in their 50s and younger. We've been really blessed to get to make good friends with new families in our area who are fitting that demographic and younger. And so that's how we do it, is we share the one truth that we have to share. And then by God's grace, as he calls people into faith, that ends up changing the face of the church.
Has the purpose of religion changed in the last 25 years?
I think that depends on how we view the purpose of religion. I actually, when we teach and talk in the church, I try to draw pretty clear lines between what I call faith life, or really using specifically biblical things. I talk about disciple life, what it means to follow after Jesus as it details in the scriptures. I try to make a clear difference between that and religion, because religion, the system of belief, really the system of practice, that is something that can be very factional. And because of that...
Describe what you mean by very factional.
Sure. There are, just within Christianity, we've got something like, now I've got a number in my mind that may be an outdated number, but when you talk about Christian denominations, organized systems of practice for the Christian faith, it's something like 40,000 known denominations, you know, where you would put your brand name on the name of your church, whether it's, you know, apostolic or Baptist or Catholic or Methodist or whatever, and then all the way down through their variations on those things.
Good grief.
Yeah, it's a lot. Now, that number may be outdated. That's one from back
still, even if you only removed it to 100, I think many people would go, really? There's 100 different? And
sure,
you're telling me there's 40,000.
Yeah, well, you know, we think about the big ones. We think, okay, we think we see a Baptist church. Okay, well, yeah, there's a Baptist church. But is that Baptist church an independent Baptist church, a free will Baptist church, a Southern Baptist church? Is it, we've got a few primitive Baptist churches. You go up into the Hollers in Appalachia, you got the old regular Baptist churches. And so you can see it sort of trickles down into all of these various expressions. And so religion, when you talk about how you organize your practice of the faith, there's a lot of different ways that people do it. And sometimes we want to wave the banner of our denomination more than we want to hold forth the truth of the gospel. The Christian faith comes down to some very clear convictions. It is not less than what the Apostle Paul gives to us in the scriptures when he says that what's most important is the truth that Jesus died for our sins according to the scriptures, that he was buried, and that he was raised on the third day according to the scriptures, which is 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 3 and 4. That is the clear convictional truth. And sometimes in church, we spend more time saying, you know, well, let me tell you all about how we believe what we believe and less about what we believe and urgently would give to you.
I definitely want to come back to a little bit about that later in the hour. As we talk about modern religion, I want to get into life as a pastor and certainly into how politics and religion have started to mix together. Our guest today, Reverend Tyler Daniels, he's the pastor at Piney Fork Baptist Church down in the Gretna, Virginia area. About 17 minutes after the hour here, WPVC's Sunday morning wake-up call. Tyler, can you tell me, just a few minutes before we take our first break, raising a family as a pastor?
Yeah, it's...
Because you've got kids.
I do, yeah, and it's... It's a great privilege. It is also fraught with difficulties. I have a great family. My wife, Mindy, and I have been married for 10 years this year, which I am just thrilled about. I don't know how we've done this long and she hasn't killed me yet.
It'd be a sin.
Was that?
It'd be a sin.
Well, yeah. Well, that would be one thing. Yeah. So thankfully, she's a woman of great restraint. No, she's... She's great, and I got to marry her back in the year 2009, and we've got these two kids, which we have twin girls, Esther and Miriam, and they're awesome. They are bright and creative and fun and funny, it's hard as a pastor sometimes. You know, church has certain demands that are placed on my life, but my family knows, and we teach them repeatedly. We tell the girls, and Mindy and I talk about it, that family is the priority. I told the church back when we were working on being called there, this is 6 years ago at this point, you know, they asked, what would prevent you from wanting to be the pastor of this church? And I said, if you're looking for the guy who will work 80 hours a week and sacrifice his family to do this, I understand you might think you need that, but I'm not that guy. You know, I'm going to eat dinner with my family. I'm going to put my kids to bed more nights than I'm not going to put them to bed. They're going to grow to know who I am, and they're going to know that they are valued. And the same goes for my wife. I intend to be there with her to grow together in this life. And so it can be difficult because I've got to dash off sometimes to go make a visit or get to the hospital, or I've got a late meeting. There are some seasons that are more stressful than others, but they know they're my priority, and we work on them. And so I'm grateful for them. They're my great privilege.
All right, let's take our first break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Our guest today, again, Reverend Tyler Daniels, giving up a vacation day from the church here for a Sunday morning wake-up call. Tyler Daniels, pastor at Piney Fork Baptist Church. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
I asked a question about your family. Your father was a pastor as well, correct?
That's right.
What was it like being on the other end of that? You were telling us about being the pastor, raising a family. What was it like with your father being a pastor and being raised in the family?
Sure. And this is really difficult sometimes because I want my kids to sort of learn from the experience that I had coming up, because I do want it to go a little different for them. My dad was a pastor. My dad, and I love him. He's been a great influence in my life. My dad was a workaholic, and he just worked all the time. And he was giving of himself for the ministry. But boy, was he busy. And coming up in that, we never doubted that we had Dad's attention and love. He coached our basketball teams coming up. I very much know what it was like to grow up with my dad's influence. But it's hard in the church sometimes because the demands are high and the spotlight is kind of on the family. No matter what we do, the family is going to be looked at a particular way, sometimes held to a different standard. And that can be challenging. But I loved growing up as a pastor's kid because it meant that even though Dad was busy, he was able to do things that other dads couldn't. You know, my dad would come to lunch at school. He was the only guy who knew how to open those cardboard cartons of milk, you know. And so all the kids would line up, and there's my dad being the hero at lunchtime. And I remember that kind of stuff. He couldn't have come to lunch with me if he'd been working in the next town over doing a 9-to-5 thing, but because he was a pastor, he could drop what he was doing and come and invest in his son that way. I got two brothers, an older brother and a younger brother. I can't vouch for their experiences because we all turned out so differently. We are not a family of pastors now, but we have all turned out quite differently. I try to learn from what my dad did, and I try to learn some things not to do because I watched Dad burn himself out. My dad had to retire early because of a medical condition that came on primarily due to stress and boundaries issues. And so we try to learn the positive and also learn some things to not repeat.
Have you had conversations with him about the differences in your congregation versus his?
This is one of the great, I don't know how to put it, tragedies or regrets, really. My dad had a stroke at the age of 58. And I had just become, it was the year that I became the pastor at Piney Fork Baptist Church. I'd been in the ministry for a handful of years before that on staff at a church. But we never lived real close to each other. He was on the other side of the state from where I was. And we didn't have a lot of time that we shared. And so during that one little 6 or 9 month period after I became a pastor, we got to spend a little bit of time talking, but not much. And now it's my great regret because the thing that my dad's stroke took away was a lot of his cognitive presence. He can't hang with a conversation quite the way that he used to. And I just know that inside the man there is this wealth of information that could really help a young pastor like me. And it's just hard to get that back out now. So what I do, I try to remember what Dad did that had an impact on me as a young person. I try to remember we were privileged to go back to my old home church last year. They called me to come and preach their homecoming event. And trying to hear the stories that others told about Dad, the things they remember about his ministry, yeah, I try to still pick that stuff up and make sure that I can have that and hang on to it and hopefully learn from it and have it be beneficial in my own life and ministry. But yeah, we never did get to have those coffee conversations about, Dad, what did you do when somebody was mad at you and they criticized you? Because that stuff happens. And then said, Dad, what do you do when somebody is sick and in the hospital, but you're on vacation? How did you balance that? That's our reality right now. One of my dear elder ladies is sick and in the hospital as we speak. And we've been praying for her. But, it's like, Dad, how did you juggle that? Did you leave from vacation? Did you make a phone call? What did you do? And it's hard to get that stuff back out. So I regret that, but I'm so thankful for what I've gotten to know and learn from my dad.
Sunday morning wake up call, WPVC. Our guest today, Reverend Tyler Daniels. He's a Baptist pastor at the Piney Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. Can you tell me some of the best things that you see as a pastor at your church?
It's a lot of fun to be a pastor. It might not look like it all the time, but it really is a lot of fun. What's great in the ministry life is that people invite you in. And sometimes it can be really hard to get close to neighbors, anybody who's kind of outside that close circle of friends. It can be hard to really get to share life with them. But as a pastor, I have found so many more open doors, even with people who aren't part of our congregation. They just invite you in. They want to share their joys. And they trust you with their pain, which that's this sort of immense kind of privilege to be invited into that. But it's really great because you get to have fun with folks. You get to watch their kids grow. You get to celebrate with them the things that are going well. When you're friends with a business owner and they have a great night or a great year, whatever it might be, you get to sort of shake hands with them and congratulate them and be interested. You get invited into people's homes. And they cook awesome food for you. Sometimes they bring that stuff by your house. It's a really special kind of thing. I don't know where else you would find it in the world. What other kind of work, so to speak, you would find it in. But as a pastor, there's a lot of joy to be had there. It's not easy. It is difficult in a thousand ways. There's also great joy there, friendship and in being invited into people's lives.
How about some of the most challenging things you see in our culture or in our country that you see from the lens of, as a pastor?
Yeah. Well, you know, just watch the news any given day and whatever the headlines are. These things where there are kind of deep divides politically, all of that stuff comes back into the church. And often in churches, you will have a variety of perspectives. Not always. Sometimes in the church, you've got kind of a monolithic kind of this is the perspective and the way that we think through things. But as there are cultural questions, as there are challenges that are going on, whether they are political, whether they are moral, all of that comes back into the church. And you might think that the person sitting next to you, because you live in the same town and you go to the same church and you have the same pastor and you read the same Bible, you might think you're thinking the same thing as them. And then you get around a Sunday school table with them and they all start talking and sharing opinions and you realize, wow, that person is not on the same page that I'm on, and I thought I was on the same page as whatever it is, conservative Christianity or the truth of the Bible or even sometimes, you know, this particular political party. And you find out the person next to you is not there. You're like, well, as a church now, we got to figure some of this out. Answering that question is difficult from time to time.
Let's carry this down a generation. We talked about your father being a pastor, and we mentioned a few minutes ago that you're raising a family. Can you tell me about the difference from your generation as a child to your children? Talk about that for a minute, the things that you learned as a child and carried with you to being an adult as a pastor, and now the things you see and are trying to teach your children in a completely different culture in many ways. How do you do that and yet let them grow?
What's been fascinating in watching our family grow is we have determined, Mindy and I, that we are actually pretty, I don't know which word to use. Maybe it's narrow, maybe it's firm. I'm not quite sure which one applies. But we do keep things pretty tightly focused for our family and for our girls. And we're very deliberate about how we bring them up, particularly in matters of belief, in an understanding of what God's word says. You know, the prayer that we pray repeatedly over our children is we want them to come to know and to love Jesus. And we want them to come to know and to love him, place their faith and their trust in him so that they can grow as vital believers. And I'm confident my parents prayed similar things for me, but I know the approach was dramatically different. We've determined a long time ago, as we've reflected on it, that my parents' approach was much more lax. I would not have expected this from a pastor's family, but my parents' approach was much more lax than I am with my kids. And I have yet to figure out which one is right and which one is wrong. You know, could I be a little more flexible with my kids? Yeah, probably. Should my parents have put up a few more guardrails around me? Yeah, probably. But as a kid growing up, I don't have a clear memory of my parents sitting down with us and talking through complicated concepts. Now, my girls are six, so we don't go but so deep. But I don't have a lot of clear memories of sitting down and really talking through stuff around the kitchen table. You know, the why for certain things that have happened, or, you know, sort of revisiting matters of belief and faith and how it happens in the world. I don't recall a lot of deliberate family prayer time. Meanwhile, with our girls, we try as much as we can to have good, healthy, thorough conversations together, even with our six-year-olds. We talk about things going on in the world. We try to answer their questions. And then also when we talk about prayer times and how we grow them up in the faith, they see their parents take deliberate time studying God's word, praying. And then also they take time with us every night when we spend time praying together and asking them what we should pray for. And that's stuff that I don't recall happening so clearly as I was coming up. Developing those disciplines personally has been transformative. And so I really want to make sure that I try to hand that to my kids. Growing it organically is something altogether different.
Do you have concerns or plans for 10 years from now when they turn out to be or will be 16-year-old girls?
Well, I think I'll be praying more personally. I've talked about that personal discipline. I think I'm going to double it or triple it when they're 16. Yeah, I don't know how to predict what the world is going to look like when they're 16 years old or when they're 18. We were out at the football game at UVA last night, and I'm watching young people, and I'm thinking to myself, these young people are dramatically different from where I was 10 years ago when I was a young person. Now it's like 15 years ago when I was a younger person. And then I think, what's it going to look like 10 years from now, 12 years from now for my girls? I truly don't know. I don't know how to answer the questions that they're going to have, because I know the questions we're answering now are questions nobody saw coming 20 years ago. So I don't know how to predict it. My hope is to build them up in the things that are enduring. You know, if we give them a solid worldview, one that can answer life's biggest questions, like where we come from, where we're going, what happens when you die, if we can answer these big questions and hopefully give them a lens through which they can view their life, then maybe, just maybe, when their tough questions come, they'll have the equipment they need to be able to answer it. But yeah, oh boy, a lot of prayer is going to go into those 16-year-old years. I don't know what to do. Everybody always talks about with these twins, they say, you know, oh, you're going to have to prepare for, you know, two cars and two college tuitions and two prom dresses. And I'm not worried about prom dresses. I'm worried about prom dates. Let me tell you how that works. So we're going to be praying a lot when they're that age.
Again, our guest today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, WPVC, Reverend Tyler Daniels. He's the Baptist pastor at Piney Fork Church in Gretna, Virginia. Thank you so much for being here on your vacation Sunday. Now, let's talk for a minute about modern life. And we're talking about 16 years from now. Let's talk about 6 years today with your six-year-olds anyway. This week during your vacation, you went out to Monticello.
We did.
Yeah? How was that? You're looking through history, right? But you were there this week anyway. What was your thoughts on that?
Yeah, this was really a great joy for me, because ever since I was in college, I've been, I wouldn't say a student of, but an admirer of that era of American life, that revolutionary era. And I've done reading about Mr. Jefferson, and I've really enjoyed some of that. So going to Monticello was a great gift for me. Like, I really wanted to do it, but we were hoping in taking our kids there that they'd get to see some of a piece of real life. You know, now, admittedly, Mr. Jefferson's plantation was not exactly a common experience in colonial revolutionary America. But to get to put their hands on it and their eyes on it and see it, we really wanted them to have some of that. We just did Walt Disney World earlier this year, where everything is a party and everything is make-believe. And so to go to some place that's a little more terrestrial, a little more real, that was a lot of fun for me to be able to show them that. Whether they got it or enjoyed it, you would probably have to ask them. It was a lot of, hey, don't do this, hey, don't talk loud, hey, don't touch that. But we think that they had a good time. It's good for us to be reminded that there is such a thing as history, that not everything is just in the moment. And so trying to teach my girls that, no, this nation is over 200 years old, and there are some important figures and important happenings that you need to know about, because that will inform what's coming. I think there's great value in that. That is just plain fun. It was a great day up there on the mountain. We really had a good time.
You know, Charlottesville recently ended the celebration of Thomas Jefferson's birthday because he was a slaveholder.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so this is the question, and we keep going around and around on it. You know, which statues do we keep up or take down? Which days do we continue to celebrate or not celebrate? And it's an immensely difficult question to answer. I tend to be one who falls on the side of, we need to really carefully and thoughtfully teach history. And they do a wonderful job of that at Monticello today. Now, I did Monticello when I was a child, and I don't remember it as clearly, but they certainly did not do as thorough a job of communicating that so many of those who labored for Mr. Jefferson were enslaved laborers. And they reference that repeatedly. And I think it's very helpful to keep that clear. And we taught our children, 6 years old, going up to the Little Mountain, that you're going to hear a lot about enslaved laborers and slavery. And the idea there, and we told it as clearly as we could, is the totally morally wrong idea that was permitted 200 years ago, where a person could own another person, for which there is no moral ground, for which there is no biblical ground. And we tried to make this as clear as we could to them and tell them, you're going to hear about that. And that is a piece of our history that we have to wrestle with. I want it taught as clearly as it can be taught. I want folks to know very really what it was like. But I also don't want it to be just completely jettisoned from our cultural conversation because we look back at it and say, it was wrong then, and so let's punt all of it. Let's clear all of the monuments away. Let's clear all of the way that we teach it away. Let's make sure that everybody who was ever known as a slaveholder is vilified. You lose a lot of kind of the richness of history when you do that. These moral complications, it's not even a complication, these complete moral downfalls in our culture, they should be taught as such. They should be communicated as such, and we try to do that with our girls. But also, we have to make sure that we're teaching it and not just viewing everything through a modern lens and rearranging history to say everything about it was bad and wrong because of our original sin of slavery. Now, let's talk about that original sin, and let's figure out how we can learn from this where we stand in a culture today to get this right.
Again, our guest today is Tyler Daniels. He's the pastor at Pawnee Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. Very interesting conversation. I hope everyone's enjoying this. Not often we can have a minister on a Sunday. Let's take our second break. And here we are back again, thanks to our underwriters for making the show happen. Again, Reverend Tyler Daniels here with us on a Sunday to talk about modern religion, life as a pastor, and let's do some politics and religion and how they mix together.
Okay.
In today's world. Your favorite part, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah?
The good news is I'm not running for anything, and I'm pretty sure my church is going to welcome me home. So I think that I can talk about whatever we need to talk about.
Well, we do put it on podcast.
Never mind. Let's talk about, ask me questions about my dog. Let's do that instead.
Yeah. How is your dog doing?
He's great. He's 8 years old. He's a standard poodle named Otto. Best dog that's ever been.
Right. All right, moving on. The show is not going to end now. So one of the things that many people would say, and I can't give you a set percentage, is that many folks who strongly practice politics, strongly practice religion, who go to church every Sunday or frequently, don't practice what they preach, right? It's especially the more evangelical that you get. It's Jesus says this, but then they say, keep those immigrants out of our country. So it's, you know, Jesus says that we should welcome everyone and show them love, but why aren't you showing these people who need us love? And so I'm just going to throw that at you and let you talk about that for a moment.
Sure. This is one of the biggest issues in the church today. Now, I'm a Southern Baptist, and every year we convene the Southern Baptist Convention, which is all of the, I forget what the number is now, I think that number is 38,000, 39,000 Southern Baptist churches. However many of them can get together, they form a deliberative body to give shape to what we're going to do cooperatively with everything we bring. Why do I talk about that? It's because when you get 5 or 8 or 12,000 Baptists in one room, you see the spectrum. Not necessarily the spectrum of political holdings, but the spectrum of the way that people want to see those things cross over with the life and the ministry of the church. And so you can see it in any individual Baptist church or in our larger bodies. What I am seeing when I look at it at Piney Fork Church and in all the ways that we cooperate is that we have a really hard time telling the difference between what are the convictions of our faith and what are our political opinions. Political opinions are something in this free society that we are given the right to, and we are grateful for the right to vote. We are thankful that you can still stand up and say yes to some things, no to some others, and vote accordingly. Some choose to hold those as totally separate from their faith convictions. Not that they would say vote or choose something that is diametrically opposed to their beliefs, but instead that they would be willing to say do things politically or believe things politically that maybe are not as clear biblically, but they're comfortable enough drawing a little bit of a dashed line between the two and saying, you know, well, you know, those two things don't always have to add up. Then there are others who, because of what they hold according to the faith, it drives everything they do politically. Anything that falls outside of the bounds of how they believe God's word and seek to apply it in their lives, they're not going to do anything politically that would be counter to that. We are in a really interesting age for the church in today's political climate. Because historically, you really could do some things, at least over the last generation or so, where you really could kind of sort of say, well, one political party is sort of kind of the evangelical Christian preferred political party. And those who are at the head of the party, they're the ones that evangelical conservative Christians are going to feel okay voting for. Some of that is a little more nuanced than it used to be. Not every conservative evangelical Christian feels so closely tied to one political party and those who are leading the party. Which gives us the question then of where do those people turn when it comes to an understanding of politics? So take, for instance, someone like me. You know, for me, I am one whose faith convictions, right? one who's, just as Jesus taught us, one whose yes is yes and whose no is no. One who lets the Bible be the framework for what he believes and chooses. Politically, if it falls outside the bounds of that, or if the people who are leading the charge fall outside the bounds of that, then I'm going to address it biblically and not politically. I'm going to say, well, then this is outside of what I believe, and so I can't possibly vote this way, whether it's about moral issues or political issues or whatever. There are others who don't quite feel the same way that I do. They believe that you can uphold your belief, your firm belief in the scriptures, but that their responsibility as an American is to vote a particular way, choose a particular way that upholds their American sensibilities, their political sensibilities, what might be best for the nation. The idea that conservative Christianity and conservative politics always cross over doesn't hold as true anymore, at least not in my personal experience. Talking with other faith leaders, talking with leaders in our own denomination, there is a much more critical view there than maybe there has been in the last generation. That's not what you see mostly on Facebook. You know, when you see individual believers from individual churches who are loudly trumpeting what they believe politically, usually through
trumpeting.
Yes, that was a word that I used, and yeah,
not a capital T. Just a...
I didn't say anything. But what happens is we distill everything down to memes and shareable pictures and little pithy quotes, and that becomes sort of the political banner that we wave. And some people do that way too quickly, without carefully assessing what it means in the Bible. Now, as a pastor, I try as best I'm able, usually in our smaller settings where we can have dialogue, I try to make sure that we are teaching and addressing some of these things and doing it carefully and biblically, not just doing it to uphold things that we already think are true or wish were true. Now, on a Sunday morning, we tend to have a sort of broader focus, and it's less of a dialogue. It's more of the pastor trying to explicate what's in the passages of the Scripture. And that is usually all invitation. It's, here's the gospel of Jesus. We want you to know how it can reshape your life. We want you to come to faith. And so we do that as broadly as we can on Sunday mornings. When we sit down and dialogue around the table or on a Wednesday night Bible study, that's when I try to make sure that we address some of these cultural things that are going on, and to do it thoughtfully and biblically. So to go back to the top with the illustration, not the illustration, the real life example that you gave, say, of immigration. When I talked about it in our church, the way that I expressed it is, regardless of your holdings politically, because you're permitted in this country to believe politically what you believe, and to vote how you feel like you should vote. If you're going to vote for firmer borders, if you are going to vote for more boundaries, if you're going to vote for an immigration crackdown, you're permitted to do that. But when we've got refugees, people who are in need, folks who are fleeing from what at least they are telling us, dangerous, violent things, the church, regardless of what happens politically, the church should be the first ones there on the ground seeking to feed, clothe, care for. I believe, and it's sort of a radical notion, I believe that so many of these things that we wish we could solve governmentally, not borders and border patrols, but I'm talking about the care of those who are coming across, I firmly believe the church, if we were just given free license to take it over, I think the church could do it better than the government could, because we would come to it with a different level of compassion and hope and hopefulness for those who are coming. Now, I say all that. I pastor a church in the country west of Gretna, Virginia, near Smith Mountain Lake, where nobody's crossing the border to come to us. But I partner denominationally with thousands of churches who are in position to be able to minister to those who come. And so for us, the care of people, compassion, that is absolutely urgent. And so regardless of how you vote politically, that's your great privilege in America, and we're thankful for it. But the church needs to be doing the things that the church is designed to do, the care of others, explicitly so we can come and deliver the good news of Jesus to them. If we believe that folks have to believe that message, if that is the one decision a person needs to make, to place their faith and trust in Jesus, believe on him, confess him as Lord, if we believe that, and if God has said go to them, then we should be the first in line to go to them with whatever we have to give.
And our guest today is Reverend Tyler Daniels. He's the pastor at Piney Fork Baptist Church in Gretna, Virginia. I feel lucky to have him today. So go back to a couple things you said in that answer. I'm curious about if you have different issues that come up with one candidate, if one political candidate, you're trying to follow, which is more important to you? You want to follow, let me gather my thoughts here. Both candidates have something that you believe in and something that you don't. You're trying to follow them biblically, make your decisions biblically. And one is pro-life and pro-choice, and the other is build your borders and help the immigrants. How do you apply your faith to that? I'm curious, is there a ranking as to which comes first?
And this is where almost all of the complication comes in, because if you're looking for, we talk about Christian candidates. The vast majority of people running for public office will claim some kind of Christian.
Oh, I heard the line. I think I heard it three different times this past week, knowing that you were coming, from different people, called the spiritual war. I thought, oh my gosh, is this because I'm just now paying attention because Pastor Daniels is coming on? Or is this something that is regularly said, or, you know, just the new phrase? I don't know. So,
sure. Well, yeah. Well, when we talk about the idea of spiritual warfare, there's a biblical and a faith side to that, particularly when we talk about usually our battle against sin and self. And we talk about the lies that we can fall for and the way that it can take someone away from and out of the faith. And that's very real. But when we apply those words to, say, things that are happening culturally, politically, well, yeah, there are things that are not true, things that are being upheld culturally and politically that are an affront to biblical Christianity, not that Christians stand ready to be offended. And if that's our position in the world where it's like, you know, you offend me, we're missing the point of where we should be standing in the faith anyway. But these issues that we deal with as far as what presents challenge for a Christian, challenge is not always spiritual warfare. Difficulty is not always spiritual warfare. And so with these, the idea of political candidates, you know, holding in tension, the fact that while some will take the name Christian and say, well, I'm a Christian candidate, or they'll affirm their ties to a Christian church, when you look at the bullet points on their website or on the flyers they mail out or whatever, and you say, okay, well, I agree with that, and that seems to jibe with the truth of the scriptures, and then, oh boy, I don't agree with that, and then this one I've never even really thought about before. What we find is that when you look at all of the candidates, there is not one clear candidate who stands for and upholds all of the things that a person who is a convictional, we'll say Bible-believing Christian, there's not one candidate that person can say, yeah, they're getting it all right. Which means that come election time, this is a really complicated idea, it stinks. there's not always a right answer. I remember particularly in our family, we were talking about candidates a few election cycles ago, and the clearest candidate for us to vote for based on how we believe and the things that we hold politically, the clearest candidate was also somebody that we had a deep disagreement with as far as faith is concerned, what they call Christianity and how they chose to practice it. And we said, well, that's not us, and worse than it not being us, it's not Bible. And so we've got a problem there, because this is the candidate who stands for all of the things that we believe convictionally. Here's one who does believe that life begins at conception. Here's one who does uphold the whole sanctity of human life, and not just from conception, but also all the way into elder years. And on down the line for the bullet points. But we have a deep disagreement on the Christian faith itself. Well, what do we do then? Do we vote for the candidate who seems to check all the boxes, but who we're not even entirely sure they're praying to the right God? That's difficult. Now, that's sort of higher level critical thinking, though, when you approach this. Most of us, as we approach this, it happens at a much baser level. It's who is the guy who looks the most like the political party I've voted for forever, or who's the guy who says the most things that in the moment seem to match what it is I've been taught to believe and uphold as an American Christian. And we just make that decision, and we can do it kind of in a snap. But there are those of us who take more time and take more prayer and really have to wrestle through these things. And we are in a season of political wrestling right now as conservative Christians. I know that the overwhelming majority of what we would call conservative evangelical Christians, that they have voted for and continue to support the current president. But there's also more than enough folks who are inside those conservative evangelical circles who also have deep questions about moral issues and about things that are said and done. And all of that has to be in the picture.
3 minutes left with our guest today. Next week, the organization Indivisible will be our guest with Dan Gould covering the show. Reverend, a question. I'm curious what you think about your thoughts on the current presidential administration?
Of the United States of America?
Yes.
Yeah, great question.
President Trump.
With President Trump, you have a man who, what else can be said that hasn't been said already?
You haven't said it.
I haven't said it. Okay. And remember, I'm not running for anything, and I'm pretty sure my church will welcome you home, but Piney Fork Church, feel free to turn off the podcast anytime. No, when you think about the current, when I think about the current presidential administration, here's where you see the conflict lived out. And not just lived out, but writ large. You have a character who stands very obviously in the culture. This is not a quiet or a subtle person. And this is not someone whose thoughts are guarded. They're out there for everyone. Which means that if you assess not just where he stands politically, because again, he checks a lot of boxes for the conservative evangelical Christian as far as being pro-life, as far as, again, moving on down the line of the things that he has stood for. But also you have some pretty significant moral and worldview questions. And any thoughtful Christian is going to look to that and say, this at least deserves more careful thought and prayer than just saying, well, he's at the head of the Republican Party and I'm going to vote. And so for me personally, I try to be on the thoughtful Christian side. And so we carefully assess that. We pray for the man. We pray for this country. It's a great place to live. I'm so thankful by God's grace I'm an American. And so having done all that, we try to be wise.
All right. Thanks to Tyler Daniels for being our guest today. Not every day you get a reverend here live in the studio on a Sunday.
This has been a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to Mike Friend for coming in and substituting as our producer. Thanks, everybody.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC.